When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, no matter how contrary that might seem, just like the nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, delighted as ever that you've joined me today. Later, we have a date with a friend of the show, coach and author Michelle Ellman. Michelle's latest book is called The Selfish Romantic, and we talked a little about the power of saying no, which is something that's coming up a lot at the moment. Now, some of you might have noticed that you're more able to be assertive these days, to say no and mean it. That could have something to do with the stars, or our star in particular. July has been a month of intense solar activity, so much so that scientists now think that the solar maximum we expected in 2024 or 25 could happen by the end of this year. Now, that's the time in the sun's cycle where activity peaks and the sun suddenly flips so that the north and south poles swap places. And the lead up to this is known for massively increased sun activity like plasma flares, increased radiation emissions and sunspots. It's a time that can cause havoc with Earth's communication systems and even cause satellites to crash and burn. And of course, that increase in solar activity affects all life too. It's a time to take even greater care of ourselves, in other words, because all that solar activity gives us the fire to let go of what doesn't serve us personally. It really is a time to live an empowered life on your own terms and say no where appropriate and mean it. And on the subject of letting go, it's many years since I learned the Huna prayer in a process called Ho'oponopono, but I've come back to it this past couple of weeks. Huna, by the way, is an ancient Hawaiian spiritual practice and way of life, and Huna, meaning secret, is the name Western people gave it, although there was nothing secret about it in Hawaii. It's a way of putting things right, or pono. That's what the word means. A system of healing and empowerment that's been shown to be hugely transformative. I've written a fuller blog post about it that you can read on my website at thepracticalalchemist.uk. But the basis of it is that when we heal ourselves, we heal the world. That if we allow ourselves a deep and honest compassion for ourselves and others, if we were able to love ourselves and were willing to forgive as well as be forgiven, then we can heal anything. The belief in Ho'oponopono is that everything in your life, people and situations, is your creation. When you go through the process, you take full responsibility for everything you've created. Now, what I do is I focus on what it is that I want to heal and feel where that lies within me. You can always feel something in your body. And then I repeat the very simple words, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. Simple yet powerful. And I recently learned from a friend that eating certain foods like blueberries works as a physical activation for the release work. Now, you can either eat the blueberries physically, as I've been doing, or in your imagination. And they call it a cleaning tool. So other cleaning tools include strawberries and hot chocolate. It's all about initiating the clearing process rather than getting bogged down in the issue. It's about allowing you to bypass the intellect more easily. And I love how this initiation is all about having fun and enjoying something as your subconscious self works on the release. Talking of which, I visited Scotland's only lavender farm the other day, and they were hoping for some warm sunshine for their harvest to release lots of the essential oils. I'm not sure they're going to get it, as the weather in eastern Scotland has been pretty disappointing this summer. It was very interesting to see both French and English varieties growing, though, and learning the difference between the two. You can read more on that on my blog at thepracticalalchemist.uk, and I hope to bring you a chat with the lavender farmers themselves very soon. Now, here's a question for all you keen and even not so keen gardeners. Have you got any nasturtiums in your garden? And if not, why not? Let me tell you why you should grow nasturtiums, apart from the fact that they brighten up any garden window box or hanging basket. Here's another one of my musings from the Veg Patch.
So here I am back on the patch, and today I want to talk about another plant that is so good for the garden and one that we can eat. And I love the taste of it. And that plant is nasturtium. Now, they are so easy to grow as long as you've got sort of fairly poor soil. They really like poor soil. They don't like it too rich. If it's too rich, you'll get a whole bunch of leaves, which you might want if you like the leaves in your salad. They're rather gorgeous in salads. Lovely peppery taste to the leaves. A bit more peppery than rocket, so, or arugula. So some people don't like it, but I think they're fantastic. But if you want it to flower, just be sure that you're planting them in soil that isn't too rich. So they're great to eat. The flowers are great to eat. And you might see them in restaurants on salads and along with borage, which I spoke about recently. And on top of being great to eat, they're also good in the garden because they tempt all the black fly away from your crops. So you might want to plant them as a companion plant amongst your beans or tomatoes that tend to attract aphids. The nasturtiums will, they won't do anything to kill the aphids, but they attract them away from your core crop. So think about companion planting with nasturtiums. And on top of that, they're really pretty in the middle of a garden. They really make everything look nice. And I'm not the kind of person who likes a garden that's so perfect. I don't mind the odd weed here and there. So, you know, you might want to maybe plant a bed of nasturtiums and poppies and dahlias, for instance, because they'll all attract black fly away, but also flea and cucumber beetles away from squash and cucumber plants as well. Now, cabbage white butterflies, which are the bane of some gardeners' lives, they're certainly the bane of our lives last year when they landed all over our brassicas. Sometimes, if you have enough nasturtiums around, they will choose to lay their eggs on nasturtium leaves rather than your cabbage leaves. So all in all, a really good plant. And as I say, great for eating, great flowers, great leaves for food. And then on top of that, you can also eat the seeds. Now, you can save the seeds once they've dried for next year, or when they're fresh, you can pickle them. And there'll be plenty of recipe ideas for that online. But I have pickled nasturtium seeds in the past, and they're very, very tasty, very palatable indeed. So, you know, it's a plant that a lot of people think is just a plant for hanging baskets, just to look pretty. But no, it's such a valuable plant. So it's a bit too late at this time of year, maybe to plant them and expect them to flower. But next year, when you're planting, think about where you're planting what and whether you can plant nasturtiums as a companion plant, along with maybe poppies and dahlias, to tempt all those bugs away from your edible crops, your other edible crops, I should say. It's just one way that we can work with nature, in line with nature, and still reap nature's bounty. So happy gardening. And if you want to learn a little bit more about what to do with nasturtiums, do head on down to my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk, where there will be some more information for you.
Yeah, the first time I tried to pickle nasturtium seeds wasn't totally successful, I must confess. Make sure you get the pickling mixture right, and there are plenty of recipes online for that. And also make sure that you sterilise the glass jar properly before you fill it with your pickle mixture. Otherwise it'll go all mouldy and horrible, which is what happened to mine. Now, that was the first time. I've learnt since. Now stay with me, because it's time to take a break now, but we'll be right back after this with the fabulous author and coach, Michelle Elman, talking about dating.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the Practical Alchemist, and it's time to meet our date, the very inspirational coach, Michelle Elman, whose new book is called The Selfish Romantic, How to Date Without Feeling Bad About Yourself. Something I wish I'd read when I was younger. Now, Michelle is well known for her honest and refreshing approach to relationships, and especially boundaries, and I was delighted to welcome her back onto the show to talk about her latest work. Michelle, it is so good to have you back on the show. Now, since we spoke, you've had another book out. Tell us about that. It's all about relationships.
Yes, so it's called The Selfish Romantic, and as life would happen, it took a bit of a turn after I got the book deal. So I was single for 8 years, loved dating, always found that no matter how I talked about dating, all I ever heard were negative things, and everyone was always talking about how awful being single was. And so I just wanted to write a positive book about dating and how I love dating. And then I got the book deal and got into a relationship 2 weeks later. So
that's how these things happen, isn't it? It's absolutely how these things work.
It's that cliche of when you don't expect it.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a difficult conversation with both my boyfriend and my editors have, because my boyfriend at the time didn't realise that's what my book was about. He knew I was writing a book, but didn't know what it was about. But I just thought, like, a lot of the time... So for listeners, I'm mixed race, I'm plus size, I have scars on my stomach from previous surgeries. You get told a lot of things about how your love life should be based on what you look like. And I just found a lot of it was nonsense. Yes, absolutely. There is body shaming that happens within a love life. There is, like, on dates, and there are people who can fetishize you for your race and things like that. But if that's all we ever talk about, of course people are going to be fear-mongered into going on dates, and also walking into first dates expecting it to be awful and filled with shame and abuse. And actually, there was so much good. And in those 8 years of dating, there wasn't a single time when... granted, I did a few vetting things in the texting process, but on actual dates, I was never body shamed for being my size or the way I looked or any of those things. And I just found that if we don't have a conversation about the positive sides too, no wonder people are scared to get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And I've noticed that particularly younger people, not just younger people, though any age, people really are worried about how they look, about, you know, how they look when things get a little bit more intimate, you know, that sort of thing. And very often, actually, they'll have a similar experience to yours and they'll just go, oh, well, that was all right then. That was easy. Yeah. Nothing was said.
I think the main thing that people are hooking onto nowadays, because there are more people who meet on dating apps rather than in real life, people get hooked on the thing of, oh, what if they think I don't look like what I look like in my pictures?
Yeah.
And the thing is that if you are putting up filtered and photoshopped images, then absolutely you have a right to worry about that. But if you are putting up realistic photos of yourself, accurate photos of yourself, and even if you're that worried about it, maybe put up a few unflattering images of yourself, then you can go on that date trusting that person's opinion that they've decided they find you attractive at what you look like right now. And the thing is, now that I am in a relationship, it actually cements what I believed in the even further, because their attraction to you should not be that fragile. And if it is so dependent on what you look like, good luck actually having a long-term relationship. The ways my boyfriend has seen me, I've had eye surgeries, like not showered for 6 days because I'm like recovering from eye surgery, can't even open my eyes. Like I put a joke post up the other day of my boyfriend has a knack for taking very unflattering photos of me. And so I did a post of like all the worst photos that people have never seen on my Instagram. And I was like, this is how my boyfriend sees me. And yet he's still attracted to me, because what attracts you to a person isn't just what they look like, it's their whole personality. You aren't choosing to date a body, you are choosing to date a human. And if they are so fragile in thinking if you gain 5 pounds you're out of here, good luck trying to get pregnant, good luck any actual real life thing. When you are in a long-term relationship, you're dealing with grief, you might be dealing with miscarriage, there are so many more things that are way more important than what you look like. And I think a lot of it stems from the fact that I went through so many surgeries and for so long was so insecure about the surgery scars I have. But frankly, if someone's going to run away because of a few surgery scars, do you really think they're going to hold your hand through hospital? Like, that's the bigger question.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But a lot of women will be listening to this and thinking, wow, she's brave though. That's brave, right? You know, because you know that we're all so indoctrinated, we're so socialized into thinking we have to be beautiful at all times and so wonderfully, I don't know whether wonderfully feminine, but you know what I mean. We're all socialized into thinking we've got to put forward our best face.
Yeah. I think it's important to understand that whilst it might be considered brave in our society, this bravery didn't come from nowhere. My bravery comes from doing a lot of things that people find unacceptable to do, like going to a work meeting with no makeup. I've turned up to this call with no makeup because I know it doesn't affect my performance, and my appearance absolutely in no way affects how I perform at a talk, in a meeting, on a podcast, on a radio show, any of these things. And so yes, the first time I went to and did a talk without makeup, sure, it might have been a little bit scary. I maybe had a few thoughts in my head of, oh, are they going to look at me like I can't do my job because I don't look the way I'm meant to? But those things build up. So the first time I decided to wear shorts, it built a little bit of confidence. The first time I went on a date without makeup, it built a little bit of confidence. And the more you do it, actually what you realize is if you aren't insecure about it, it's not as big a deal as you think. When I was insecure about my scars and I was insecure about my weight, it's all I ever thought. Like, so if someone stared at me in the street, I was like, they're staring at me because I'm plus size, they're staring at me because they can see my scar. But if you actually believe in yourself, I'm like, oh, are they staring at me? They might be staring behind me, they might be staring at me because I've got a beautiful pink skirt on right now. Like, there are a million reasons, but you make up the story in your head to fill the gap. And a lot of the time when I was so insecure about my scars and I would over explain and tell all these guys before I took my top off in the bedroom, they just looked at me like, wow, that's overwhelming and a lot of information, but I don't care. And I would do this like build up of like, I have something really important to tell you. And it's a mood killer. Like, I'm sitting down and almost like breaking the news that someone in my family's died. And actually all I have to reveal is that I have a few scars on my stomach.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I get that. And may I just say, you look absolutely great. You may not be wearing makeup, but you look fantastic. I mean, you know.
Well, you know what's the weird thing about makeup is that if you wore makeup every day of your life, it just takes one day to not wear makeup for people to actually know what you look like. So I've actually never understood this keeping up the pretense of people only knowing your made up face.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And many younger women I know look completely different with their makeup on. You know, yeah. Their whole face is completely transformed. I mean, how do people get to know you when you look like a completely different person?
But I think the key is that it's different. It's not better. And that's another thing you have to unlearn, is that me with makeup is not better. It's just different. Yeah. And I think what was really sad was when I was 21 years old, I had a housemate who wouldn't let her boyfriend see her without makeup, which meant she woke up in the morning and ran to the bathroom, did her makeup and snuck back in bed. And I was like, they make jokes about that in like TV shows about the 50s and like Housewife and that era. I'm thinking of Marvelous Miss Maisel because I just watched it. But it's actually so sad that the person you love most, the person who you choose to be your partner, you're not even okay with showing your true face because you believe that they're going to run or they're going to dump you because they've just seen your makeup, your face without makeup. And this is where it goes back to what you look like should not be this fragile. Like, you want someone who's going to be with you, whether you get in a car crash and end up in a wheelchair tomorrow, or whether you end up being in a fire and then having burn marks all over your face. Things happen. Like, I know it's morbid, but I also have a little bit of a morbid brain because I had 19 surgeries before. So I lived in that world, but it happens, and you don't want someone dumping you because your appearance has changed. And yes, there's some aspects which we can control, like our weight to some extent, but there are lots of things you can't control that happen in life, and you want a partner who will be there throughout everything. And if someone's going to dump you because of your appearance changing, you gaining weight or any of these things, that's not a partner you want.
No. No, and it comes back to self-esteem, doesn't it? It comes back to understanding that you are worthy, you are a wonderful person, there is nothing wrong with you, and that there are people out there who would be only too happy to be with you, only too happy. Yeah, it's true. And you made me think, actually, recently, of course, the weather's turned, we've finally got summer here in the UK, certainly here on the east coast of Scotland, where we seem to be about 2 weeks later than anybody else for some reason, where we're usually before everybody else. You know, I go swimming every day, as you probably remember. And we talk about how, you know, people say, oh, you know, I've got, my legs are terrible. They're not. And do you know what? Nobody's looking.
But also, you're going swimming every day. That is also a point in itself, where there are people who love swimming, who love being in water, and haven't done it in a decade because they're worried people are going to be staring at them in a swimsuit.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I dug out some of my what I call my summer swimsuits the other day, and I put on a bit of weight since I last wore them. And you know, I squeezed into one, and I thought, yeah, doesn't look too bad. Nobody's going to look anyway. And off I went, right? I mean, it's not unseemly, let's just say. But maybe another version of me would have thought, it's not quite right, or it doesn't quite fit. I've put on a bit of weight and I wouldn't have worn it. But now, you know, I just think, nobody cares. Who cares, right?
Life is short, and actually nobody cares is such an important sentence to have in your head. I think sometimes there's a thing in psychology called the spotlight effect, where because we live in our own minds, we think the spotlight's on us, that everyone's looking at us at all times. Yeah. Actually, most people are quite self-centered. Yes. They are more concerned about their own insecurities, and they have a million and one things going on in their own lives, that the last thing they have time for is to look at another person and to judge them. And if they do, that's on them. Like, that's not a person you want to be friends with or to interact with. If they're going to, can you imagine if there's a person in a swimming pool who their entire reason for being there is because they want to sit around and judge all the bodies that are walking?
Oh, in. Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous.
What a sad life. Like, I don't want to be that person. So you're already winning. Like,
exactly. And so then, all right. So we're accepting that, you know, nobody really pays much attention. But in any case, how many of us look so awful, let's say, that nobody wants to be with us? I mean, I don't know anybody.
Well, I also think like how this original idea, I guess, this confidence, this bravery formed was actually when I was 15 years old. And I noticed that all the conversations I was having with my friends was always about weight loss, beauty, appearance. I got a little bit bored of it because I always found they were all this, especially weight, was a really repetitive, same conversation. I'm going to start a diet on Monday, blah, blah, blah. And I got bored of it. And I realized like, oh, great, I can lose all the weight in the world and I still have scars on my stomach. And almost the permanence of surgery scars ended up being a gift, because I think when your biggest insecurity is weight, there's always the, I can lose the weight, I can lose the weight.
Yeah.
Whereas what are you meant to do with surgery scars apart from have another surgery to remove the surgery scars?
Yeah.
And so I made a decision at 15 that I was ugly. And this sounds really negative, but it ended up being a really positive thing I did. I decided I was ugly, but then I also realized that being ugly doesn't prevent you from fulfilling any of your dreams, including being married, having kids. And there are other, I mean, this is a very 15-year-old mentality, but I was like, ugly people get married all the time. Ugly people live fulfilled lives. And whilst that's a very rudimentary thought that I would adjust now that I'm not 15 years old, it actually has some truth to it. That, yeah, like, even the people who you are not attracted to will find someone who finds, yes, them attractive. And therefore, there is nothing that, whatever you believe ugly is actually usually what falls outside of the beauty ideal. Therefore,
correct,
you're taught to believe that's ugly. And whatever's beautiful is what you've been taught to believe was beautiful. But even then, how boring would the world be if we all had the same version of beautiful? And therefore, even if you believe you're ugly, as long as you believe it when when the person who comes into your life says you're beautiful, how is that actually going to stop your life? The only way believing you are ugly stops your life is if you allow that thought to be the reason you don't do things. So I'm so ugly, I can't go on a date. I'm so ugly, I can't apply for a job interview because I'll be rejected for my appearance. But what's stopping you isn't the belief. What's stopping you is the action to not go on that date, to not go on that job interview, to not put yourself out there. And I think that's where we come back around to dating, where like going on first dates is very much about being seen. And if you don't have self-esteem in place, being seen by a stranger, and a lot of the time feeling like that is the place where you get judged. You go on a first date and you judge whether the person is right for you. A lot of the times, if you don't have that self-esteem, you're focused on the fact that they're judging you, but you are also judging them. And so your job isn't to sit there and impress them. Your job is to sit there and be yourself and ask yourself whether that person meets your criteria as well. It's not a one-way interaction. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes when we're insecure, we get hung up on, oh, this is a one-way judgment and now I need to put on a show. When actually, they also need to impress you. But a lot of the times when I was insecure, I never even asked myself if I liked them because I was so concerned that they liked me.
Oh, I was there with you when I was younger. Yeah, it was always whether they found me attractive or liked me, never so much about what I felt about them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it took me a long time to learn that lesson. Well, we'll hear more from Michelle Ellman in a moment. First, it's time for another break to hear more from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today is the life coach and author, Michelle Ellman. Let's pick up on our conversation. Yeah, so interesting. Now, Michelle, you're a coach. And so somebody came to you with self-esteem issues and they said, I can't get out onto the dating scene. I can't, you know, I'm just miserable. I don't know what to do. What would you say to them?
I would say that you can't get better at dating without going on dates. And that sounds really obvious, but actually a lot of people want that confidence before they go on the date. But the date comes by going on the date, realizing that the worst thing that's going to happen is you don't go on a second date. And actually, you're still learning how to date by being on that date. And so I would say my pet peeve is the people who don't want to go on dating apps, want to slag off dating apps, but then they don't put any effort anywhere else. So I'm like, you want to sit at home, meet no strangers. In the average week, you meet zero new people, yet you want to date someone, but you won't go on a dating app. So I'm like, well, if you are going to do all of those things, then quit complaining. Like, you've already made your decision. You're not going on dating apps and you're not meeting anyone new in real life. But you have nothing to complain about because you are putting no effort in. If you don't meet people in your workplace, in your day-to-day life, and you don't go up to people, so let's say you do go to parties, but then you end up talking to all the friends you already know, then you do need to get on dating apps. And you don't have to feel good about it, but also don't be apologetic about it. Get on the dating app, accept you're on the dating app, and use it as a utility. And one of the things I say in my book is, when people say, oh, I hate dating apps, to me, it's like a business owner saying, oh, I hate sending invoices. No one loves sending invoices. People love money. So if you want money, you have to send the invoice.
Yep.
So if you want to go on dates, you need to go on the dating app. You don't have to love the dating app, but it's part of the process to go on the date.
Yeah. Maybe I've been going wrong there somewhere along the line. But anyway, but so it's that, though, getting back to what you were saying about, you know, the worst that can happen is you don't get a second date. But it's that fear of rejection that really gets people, isn't it?
Well, I think you have to understand they're not rejecting you. First of all, they're rejecting your dating profile. If it's a dating app. And if it's in person, they're rejecting the version of you you were on that date for what? Maximum 3 hours?
Yeah.
They're still a stranger. They still don't know you. They still don't even cut it even close to any other person in your life who actually knows you. So if you turn up on the date and get really drunk and you've presented a different version of you, they're rejecting that. Or if you turn up on the date, you're really nervous and end up not saying anything, they're rejecting that version of you. But they're not rejecting you because they don't know you. And that's where there's a layer of, I think the reason why I've never really been sensitive to the rejection is I don't really label it as rejection. You have to know me to be able to reject me. In the same way that, like, when I put out work things, they're rejecting my work as opposed to, or I put out a new book deal, they're rejecting the proposal. They're not rejecting me. And so a lot of the times we personalize it, but actually, if you see it as a positive that when they reject you, what's the alternative? The alternative is they keep dating you because they're so scared of hurting your feelings. So they waste more of your time. That's not what you want. You want people who don't think you're a good match to get out of the way so that you can find someone who is a good match.
Yes. And the way that you find that is by being authentic as well, isn't it? So again, you know, we're talking about putting on a different face for that date. And then how is anybody supposed to get to know you? I mean, metaphorically, how is anybody supposed to get to know you?
Well, so I think there's this stereotype of what a dateable woman specifically is. Like, women have been told what men want, and men is used as this monolith. And it's always assumed that they're straight, first of all. Second of all, men don't like loud women. Men don't like opinionated women. These are the things I've heard growing up. All of these are things that I am. So I'm a strong, loud, opinionated woman. I've been repeatedly told men don't like women who aren't ladylike. I am not ladylike in the slightest. I'm the kind of woman who, like, sits with their legs open and all kinds of, like, I'm not ladylike. I spill things all over myself. And what I realized is, especially the loud one, where if I go on a date and pretend to be quiet and I'm not a quiet person, what's going to happen is let's say we get into a relationship, we become boyfriend and girlfriend. I'm like, great, locked him in. Now's the time I can be my loud self again.
Oh, yeah.
The guy's going to have a shock. The guy's going to be like, who the hell is this woman? Like, this isn't who I've been dating for the last few months. So why not just turn up on the first date, be a loud woman? And no, men don't, like, this whole thing of men don't like loud women. Men are not a monolith. There are men who do like loud women, and there are men who don't like loud women. And in order to find the men who do like loud women, you have to be loud. So this pretending to be someone you're not actually is manipulation. Because if you're trying to be who they want you to be, one day the mask is going to drop, and that's when it's going to hurt the most, because then you will actively have been rejected on who you actually are, not on who you're pretending to be. And then that confirms your insecurity, because you've gone, oh, well, I pretended to be this ladylike, perfect, dateable woman, and now I've decided not to be. And this guy's got a shop. This guy's not got a shop because you're not what society says you should be to be dateable. This guy's got a shop because you pretended to be someone completely different for months, which actually is lying and manipulation, and now feels fooled.
Yes, you're absolutely right. But, you know, that's a myth that was perpetuated by all the women's magazines for many years. You couldn't open one without seeing what men want, you know, how to get your man. Right?
Yeah. But also I actually reference this in the book because I say, like, how many men's magazines had titles on it which was like how to keep your woman,
or
how to make your woman happy. None of them. I'm just thinking of all the magazines I grew up with, and I'm talking like magazines that were targeted at 13-year-olds saying things like what to wear on a first date. Men aren't being taught what to wear on a first date. They're told turn up as you are, like, come straight from work, who cares? Like,
yes, it's true. So again, looking at that side of things, again, what would you say to somebody who's really feeling intimidated by the dating process? And let's face it, it's healthy for us to get out and meet people. It's healthy for us to establish relationships with others. Members of the opposite sex or, you know, same sex, doesn't matter. It's healthy to get out there and be with people. So what would you say to those shy people, people with low self-esteem, who are sitting at home thinking, it was all very well for her to say that, but, you know, I'm not sure that I could do it?
Well, I think it's that thing of assuming it's easy for everyone else as well. So when you go on a date, you assume, oh, they're having a really easy time being on this date, but this date's really hard for me. Ultimately, you have to actually go on a date. But when you go on the date, you can actually tell the person, hey, I've not been on a date for a while. I'm feeling a bit nervous. Actually, the thing that takes up the most energy is pretending to not be nervous when you are. And actually, if you name it to the person, it becomes a really good detector on whether you want to keep dating the person. Someone who's going to respond by mocking you and going, you're nervous for what? Like, I don't want to date that person. But someone who goes, don't worry, I'm nervous too. We'll take this one step at a time. And if you ever feel uncomfortable, just let me know. That's the kind of person I want to date. And I remember on my first date with my boyfriend, we were doing this, we went to this prohibition style bar where you had to do these like weird questions at the beginning. And I'd been before, so I knew it and I knew I hated doing it, but my boyfriend had never been. So he wasn't my boyfriend at the time. He was a first date at the time.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, it's not a big deal. It'll all be fine. And then I was like, no, you don't understand. You have to answer these like role play questions and come to them with a detective agency and with all these problems. And he was like, oh, we'll handle it together. Don't worry about it. And I went, okay, also, our date starts after the questions. You can't judge me on anything that happens in that room when we're playing this stupid detective game. And it became a great icebreaker because all he cared about was making me feel comfortable in that moment. And this is a complete stranger I just met. Whereas if his response was like, why are you worrying about something so silly? It'll be absolutely fine. And was like demeaning or made me feel worse about it. Then again, that tells you that that's a person you don't want to date. So I think a lot of the time when you feel awkward, that person is feeling that awkwardness too, because they're not sure why you're feeling awkward. Whereas if you go, hey, I'm feeling awkward because I've not been on a first date for a long time, they can breathe a sigh of relief because they can go, oh, it's not me. It's not me doing it. Oh, absolutely. Let me now make you feel comfortable and know that you don't have to be awkward. So you don't have to turn up on these dates being perfect. And I think that's what creates a lot of pressure. You just have to turn up. And if it's a bad date, well, at least it's the first date you've been on in years. And that's the accomplishment in itself. And a lot of the time when I went on these dates, instead of trying to impress the person, I set a goal for myself. So I interrupt people a lot, which weirdly, the only time I don't is when I'm on TV or radio, but I do normally. And I do very much so on dates. So for one of my first dates, I was like, my goal today is to not interrupt. And so it put my focus on something that wasn't out of my control, because putting your focus on, I want to impress them, I want to get a second date, that's in their hands as much as yours. Whereas putting my focus on, I want to not interrupt on this date, that's 100% within my control. And therefore, even if I don't get a second date, I have a different win that I can take home.
I think that's a great tip. Really do. And then, you know, what's also coming into my mind is this ability or the understanding, the recognition that you have the responsibility to say, no, you're not up for this or whatever's going on. Or maybe even you just don't want to see the person again. You have the responsibility to say that as well. So it's not, you're not just waiting for the other person to make the decision about whether the date was a success or not.
So a lot of my confidence from dating actually came from having the language to end it. So a lot of the time when I was dating in especially like in my 18, 19 years, I was really scared to keep dating if I wasn't 100% sure about them, because I thought that would mean leading them on. And I didn't know how, if someone wants to keep dating, to say to them, I don't want to keep dating. And so a big part of the selfish romantic is actual texts that I've sent, because I found to set that boundary of, hey, this is making me uncomfortable, was so difficult that I also didn't know what to say. So I was sat with my friends going, how do I end this? How do I do this? And so I wanted to provide people the actual language of, hey, you're making me really uncomfortable. I don't think we should actually go on a date anymore. So I did actually cancel a date before a first date because he'd made a number of jokes about COVID and it just made me really uncomfortable. And I just found it really insensitive. And so I had sent him a message saying, hey, I know we've booked a date, but I actually don't think it's a great idea we go. Our sense of humours don't match. And I think it's best we just leave it here. And having that those conversations, until someone showed me a text like that, I didn't think you could say that to a person. And yes, they might react negatively or whatever it is, but at least you can own your communication.
Yeah, I think that's really important. It really is important. Be clear about your communication. And not be scared to say whatever it is that's on your mind. Say it in a nice way, you know, if needs be, but be very clear.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that clear communication is very opposed to how society does things a lot. And that's why things like ghosting have become more common, because we have avoided having the hard conversations. Yeah. We delude ourselves into thinking that ghosting is the kind of option when it's not. And people are left with a lot of confusion because they aren't sure, not even why it's ended, but whether it's ended.
Yeah, yeah, which is really unfair and not very nice. So, but I can see that a lot of that happens these days. People aren't quite as used to talking about their feelings and talking about what's really up for them as maybe they used to be. Or maybe we've always been like that. I don't know.
Well, I think it's that we haven't had the language for it for so long. And now we are starting to have the language for it. But a lot of the time, the tools that are given to people are given in things that aren't accessible to everyone, which is why I think it's so important to create things like books where it's more accessible than therapy, which not everyone can afford. And yes, there is NHS waiting lists, but they're very long and usually they only give you 6 weeks anyway. And so having that support of, okay, how do I actually access my emotions? How do I teach myself how to feel my feelings? Those things are really important, but we're only just starting to have those conversations.
Yeah, but I'm glad that we are doing. And Michelle, it's great that you're writing these books, and it's great that you are also coaching people and helping people, which brings me on to, if anybody wants to find out more about you or work with you or find out more about your books, because you've got quite a few, where do they find out?
So I'm at Michelle L. Ellman on all social media. So Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, all those things. And then my book, The Selfish Romantic, has just come out. And my new book is coming out in August called How to Say No, which is a children's book all about boundaries.
Which is a kid's version of your earlier book, which
The Joy
was,
of Being Selfish.
Yeah, The Joy of Being Selfish, exactly, which we talked about in an earlier show. And I think it's great that you're bringing a book out for kids to set boundaries, because, again, it's not something that we're really taught.
And I think it was always that thing of when I learned boundaries of me thinking, well, why wasn't I taught this earlier? And I'm hoping by being able to teach younger generations it, that they grow up with boundaries as their norm. So it's not something they have to unlearn, but something that is natural to them.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. And Michelle, thank you so much. And I hope that, many people will buy your books and, you know, just help themselves on a little bit, because there are so many people suffering from low self-esteem and not really knowing what to do and what to say and how to get on with it. And I think that your books are great in helping people really find their way through the maze that is modern life and modern relationships. So well done for that. Thanks so much, Michelle.
Thank you so much. That's so kind of you.
I always love talking with Michelle. You could do Ho'oponopono to help you with any issues you have with dating as well. And if it's self-confidence you need for a first date, here's something that always works for me. You can easily take a few minutes to do this before you head out on your date. You basically want to walk yourself through it, making sure that you have a successful outcome. So, for example, first sit down and relax and imagine yourself travelling to the place that you've agreed to meet. See yourself getting there without any hassle and on time, and feel into how good that feels. Then imagine when you meet, and then make sure that that goes well in your mind's eye and that you feel good about it. Notice what you say and how the other person responds in a positive way. Now, let your imagination walk you through the whole date. You don't have to make up every detail, but make sure you feel comfortable and that everything goes well, the way that you'd want it to go. Then, at the end, imagine how good it feels when you say goodbye and maybe arrange to meet again. The trick with this is to really feel into a positive state so that once you're on the date in reality, that's where your mind will naturally go instead of into a place of nerves or anxiety. Try it sometime. It doesn't just work for first dates. You can do the same process before a job interview or maybe if you have to give a speech. By the way, I noticed that you can pre-order Michelle's next book from her website, michelleellman.com. There's two E's between those L's there in the middle. And the book's called How to Say No, Setting Boundaries for Your Friendships, Your Body and Your Life. And it's aimed at a younger age group from the age of 9 upwards. So great for any youngsters out there who might otherwise be facing a bit of an issue with their self-esteem. And with that, we've come to the end of the show. I hope you've enjoyed it and found it useful. Remember, you can listen to all of our shows on all the main podcast platforms these days. And if you like what you hear, or if they've helped you, do help us spread the word by sharing them. You never know, it might be just what someone you know needs to hear. Also, if you haven't already, do check out the show I co-host with psychiatrist and coach Dr. Mark Goulston here on UK Health Radio. It's called Hurt Less, Live More. And Mark and I share experience, anecdotes and wisdom with some great guests who've had the courage to feel into their feelings and heal their lives. For even more health information, there's our sister publication, Health Triangle magazine. That's a monthly magazine and it's full of great features complementing our radio shows. And you can subscribe to that online at ukhealthradio.com as ever. So thank you for listening today. Do head over to my website. Again, it's thepracticalalchemist.uk and find out more about me and how to stay in touch. You can sign up for news from me by email at that website, but you can also find me as Practical Alchemist on Instagram, and I have a Facebook page too. Just search for The Practical Alchemist there. And of course, remember to join me for more alchemy here on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast next time. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.